WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. What if we could block a protein to stop runaway cell division? Dana-Farber laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and over the course of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, the conflict in Syria, and the crisis in Yemen, foreign correspondents have reported on the stream of regime changes and the casualties they created in their wake. What is little known, however, are the courageous women from those very parts of the world who have risked their social standing, families, and sometimes their own lives to report on their homelands, some of the most dangerous places in the world. Joining me now are two guests who can speak directly to that experience. Lebanese-British journalist Zahra Hankir, who edited a book called Our Women on the Ground, Essays by Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World. It's an anthology of essays written by 19 female reporters about their experiences working in the Middle East, and Christiane Amanpour, who wrote the foreword to the book. She is, of course, CNN's chief international anchor and host of Amanpour on PBS. Zahra, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
And do we have Christiane yet? Christiane? Okay, we'll get Christiane up on the phone in just a minute. Zahra, you wrote in the introduction that your goal in creating this collection was to amplify the voices of women trying to shape and document Arab history, quote, without projecting themes of women's issues and patriarchy onto them. Why that frame?
I wanted to give the women the freedom to really speak their own truths and to share with the world whatever experiences they felt were most poignant to them. And in doing that, obviously, so many of the women couldn't avoid themes of patriarchy and sexism and misogyny, but I didn't want to be instructing them or coaching them in one way or another to focus on those particular themes. And indeed, there are some women who don't at all touch on those themes. But I do think that the book brings to light the struggles that these women face in those particular contexts along those lines.
And you use the word sahafia in your introduction for the anthology. Correct my pronunciation of that word if it needs it.
It's perfect.
But can you talk about what that word means and the significance that it carries in the Arab world?
It specifically means female journalist, and I felt very strongly about entitling my introduction Sahafiya, because I wanted really to make this book specifically about the female experience in the Arab world as a journalist and the unique challenges that women face on the field.
Christiane Amanpour is with us now. Hi, Christiane. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you. It's always good to hear your voice. You wrote in the foreword of the book that you began your career with an all-female crew while you were reporting on the Gulf War in 1991 on CNN. What was that like, and how has it influenced the rest of your reporting career?
Well, imagine back in 1991, and we were talking, you know, nearly 30 years ago now. Imagine that we were sent to Saudi Arabia, of all places, the most patriarchal, you know, Islamic society that you can find in the world today, where women have almost no rights whatsoever. I'm sorry, there's so many phones going in my office right now. It's a busy news day, Brian. But listen, off I was sent as a sort of a junior reporter into what was considered the slightly less newsy part of the story, because Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait and all the big boys went to Iraq. Nobody could get into Kuwait, and we were sent to Saudi Arabia. So they sent me and two women, a camera woman and a sound woman, to cover the story, which became the story. And actually, it was really, really interesting because, I can't believe this, because we managed to get our foot in the door in a way that they literally didn't expect. So there were these three women in this all-male patriarchal society trying to report this story for this burgeoning, you know, network, which was CNN. And CNN was exploding onto the, you know, onto the public and global consciousness right then with the Gulf War. And we were the face of it. And it was really interesting for us. I mean, it was one of those instances where as women, we found ourselves, you know, as foreign correspondents, a foreign journalistic team, doing this work, and it worked. It really, really did work.
And you also write in the foreword to the book that the Balkan Wars in the 90s were a game changer. What changed for journalists then?
Well, I think that was a slightly different type of game changer, in that it was the game changer, which was not just about women, it was about the danger. The Balkan War was the first war in which journalists were deliberately targeted. You know, all the wars before, when I would read about colleagues who preceded me, whether it's in, you know, the World War, or whether it was in Vietnam or Central America or the Middle East or all those wars, journalists were considered, you know, people who each side wanted to see and tell their story to. And it was journalists being caught in the crossfire that led to casualties then, not really deliberately targeted. And that all changed in the Balkan War and in Bosnia. And I think it's because of the proliferation of communications, because we were then, you know, able to report live in real time from their backyard. So they had an immediate look at what we were reporting, and those who didn't like what we were reporting decided to take it out on us. And I think that that was a real major turning point, and it's only become much worse for journalists.
Christiane Amanpour, who wrote the foreword, and Zara Honkier, who edited the new book, Are Women on the Ground? Essays by Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World. Christiane, I know we only have you for about four more minutes because of this other assignment you have to go to. Zara, I wonder if you wanted to ask Christiane anything or set her up to say something that you've heard her say before.
Firstly, hi, Christiane. This is the first time we interact ever. thank you so much for writing the foreword to this book. I'm curious how you feel about specifically local women doing local coverage. I know you touch on it briefly in the foreword, but how important do you think those voices are to giving sort of a more nuanced or inclusive narrative on those particular conflicts?
Well, Zara, great to meet you on this phone call. We've communicated by email, and I am glad that you asked me to do this and that I was able to do it, because I feel very, very passionately about not just the work that I've been able to do with my colleagues, but the work all journalists do, and especially women, because I think everything is more difficult in the world for women. Mm-hmm. And so to see the women, particularly now we're focusing on, of conflicts, you know, who live in those countries and in those towns and cities, having to report, it's much more difficult and dangerous and sensitive for them, because, as you know, just as well as I do, that many of these women are considered traitors by their own side. Many of them who work in patriarchal societies are considered, you know, why are you going out and even doing this kind of job? A lot of them have to sort of hide what they're going out to do, so they're in double danger, not just from the conditions that they find themselves in, whether they're reporting on actual war and gun battles, or whether they're reporting on, you know, the equally insidious and for journalists now equally dangerous business of exploring and investigating corruption and all sorts of issues that come to the fore. And so they also, at the same time, have to kind of often hide what they're saying and doing from their own families, who either don't want them to go out to work because they think it's inappropriate, or are worried for their safety. So it's a double whammy for journalists, and especially women journalists in the field. And therefore, I feel that it's incredibly important to obviously write their stories, remember and be totally conscious of what they bring to our whole profession, and especially to their own communities. And let's just not forget the reality that the women are in their own countries who are doing this reporting are obviously much better aware and much better placed to know the intricacies of the stories than us, who sometimes, you know, fly in and certainly don't know what's going on from the very start, even though we're pretty able to pick it up as we go along. But that's why I think it's so important. And there's so many organizations. I mean, just where you know, in New York, Brian, you've got the Committee to Protect Journalists, you've got the International Women's Media Foundation, you've got many, 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 many organizations now which don't just focus on American journalists, but focus on journalists around the world as well, and focus very heavily on their freedom and their, you know, safety and their ability to report.
Christiane Amanpour, chief international anchor for CNN and host of Amanpour on PBS. Thanks so much for a few minutes today. I know you're in the middle, so thank you very much.
Thank thank you so much. Wish I could stay longer, but it's all breaking and happening around us now.
Is there something going on I should know about?
No. I mean, look, I'm trying to get a major interview out of Pakistan because of what's going on in India and Pakistan. The Indian government has removed the special status of the disputed territory of Kashmir. And, you know, it's a majority Muslim area, and it's disputed by both Pakistan and India, and it's meant to have a sort of a diplomatic resolution. And these two nuclear-armed neighbors have fought three wars over this this area. And the Indian Prime Minister today just gave an address to the nation, and nobody is quite sure where this is going to lead. And the Pakistani Prime Minister has said that they are downgrading diplomatic relations with India, and you know, I'm desperately trying to get the highest level interview that I can. It'll be on my program Amanpour and Company tonight on PBS, so watch out.
We will be watching and watching out. Christiane, thanks again.
Thank you.
And we continue with Zara Honkier, who edited the book Our Women on the Ground, Essays by Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World. And our phones are open at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, to talk about anything that has come up so far in this conversation or anything from the reporters whose essays are included in the book that you might be familiar with. So let's talk a little bit about access. As female journalists in a region that segregates the genders quite a bit, many of the women whose essays are included in the book, whose reporting is included in the anthology, had access to half the population that their male colleagues normally are barred from interviewing. Can you give me an example of that?
Sure. So one of the authors, the Syrian author, her name is Zainat Hayim. She was covering the uprisings in the early stages and then the aftermath of that when the country descended into a brutal civil war, as we know. And she found it very difficult to move from one place to another. She was asked to cover her hair. She had to have a male chaperone who was a relative. She struggled with some of the coverage, and she found that there were areas of access specifically that only women could enter, for example, a gynecological clinic. And she entered those clinics with cameras, and she turned her attention to the plight of the woman in Syria during wartime and was raising awareness on the struggles that they were facing and how they were responding to the country's descent into civil war. So we really go into those spaces with her, and she's not the only one. Several of the authors, as you mentioned, do the same. Iman Hilal, Amir al-Sharif, Yemenis and Egyptians have incredible access to women. Also, some of the women decide to focus on women's issues because they feel that they are neglected during times of war. The Libyan author Hippa Shibani decides, after facing threats due to some of her coverage of what occurred in Libya in the aftermath of Qaddafi's murder and then the country also descending into war, she decided she wanted to host a show about specifically about women's issues. She was told at the time that she should steer away from serious issues, but she gradually, progressively started tackling really major sensitive issues that were considered taboo in Libya, one of which is that Libyan women are not allowed to pass along their nationalities to their children. So she hosted kind of an explosive show on that.
Huh. And for some of these journalists who couldn't be directly involved in the action because of gender-based restrictions, can you explain what kinds of workarounds they employed when they weren't in the field themselves? Maybe that example that you just gave of that kind of a show and easing your way into the harder issues is one. How else did you find some of the women journalists who you represent use maybe social media or YouTube to report?
Sure. I actually opened my introduction with an example of that. It's a harrowing example of a Syrian Kurdish woman who was primarily reporting. It was citizen journalism, so to speak. It was not mainstream media, by all means. And she was living in Raqqa at the time when ISIS was controlling Raqqa. And she basically wrote on Facebook every day, nonstop. She would post on developments of what was happening in Raqqa at a time when very few journalists, Western journalists, could enter those areas. So social media played a huge role in that. There's another example of New York Times reporter Hoda Saad, who developed strong relationships with sources in Syria, with males who would become ISIS fighters or they would fight with the Syrian regime. She had access to them via WhatsApp, and she developed very intimate journalistic relationships with them that gave us insight into what these men were thinking.
I wonder if any of the women in the anthology take on war as a patriarchal institution. It is so, of course, it's so often men in power that, you know, there's no apples to apples comparison over history. But many people imagine that if women ruled the world in country after country and region after region, that there just would not be the physical violence interpersonally or at the level of the state war that there is today.
I don't want to speak on behalf of the women, but I would say that that was a theme for sure. I would also like to read a sentence from
Please.
One of the chapters by Hannah Alam, who's a reporter at NPR covering extremism in America. She writes in her chapter about her time in Iraq, and she ends her chapter beautifully. She says, "The experiences were woven into the stories I filed, but I never wrote the truth as plainly as this. Every time Iraq began to unravel, it was women who worked the hardest to stitch it back together." And I think that's a beautiful thought, and it captures what you're saying perfectly, in that during times of war, it's really the women who are keeping, you know, the behind the scenes going. If you think about places like Yemen, you know, when there are so many men out on the field or fighting, then the women are at home doing their best to keep their families intact, to try to find whatever food they can for their families, to really keep life, you know, going as to the best of their ability. And I definitely think that's a theme throughout several of the essays.
212-433-WNYC is our phone number for comments and thoughts and questions. 212-433-9692 for Zahra Hankir, who edited Our Women on the Ground, Essays by Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World, and we'll continue after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Zahra Hankir, editor of Our Women on the Ground, Essays by Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World, an anthology of essays written by 19 female reporters about their experiences working in the Middle East. We can take phone calls if you have a question or a thought at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's take a phone call right now. Ben in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian, and good morning, Zahra. Thank you for taking my call. Ms. Hankir, I wanted to just ask, because it is unfortunately always prevalent in conversations about Syria, about just how much the situation in Syria has deteriorated over the last several years. And my apologies if this is a bit of an odd question, but I simply wanted to ask you how you feel about the international community and whether or not they have turned their backs on Syria and therefore essentially turned their backs on Syrian women and Syrian women journalists doing reporting, not only because of their courageousness, but because no journalists pretty much are there anymore, at least not many Western journalists.
Thank you so much for your question, Ben. I do think that many feel that the international community has failed Syria over the years. There was a particular turning point, there's a feeling that the situation now is so protracted that it's almost out of control. And it's not just that segments of the international community have turned their back towards Syria, but also that some segments of the international community have worsened the situation by virtue of their intervention in Syria. I don't want to talk too much about the politics. I would like to talk about what you mentioned about Syrian or just women journalists in general and the importance of the work that they're doing on the ground there, and to frame that within the international media narrative of what is the big story today. And it is usually stories about the Trump administration and America's relationship with various countries in the Middle East. And therefore, there's a feeling, I think, a predominant feeling is that, you know, Syria is less of a big story in the international media narrative than it used to be. And in that sense, yes, there's definitely a feeling that the work that's being done on the ground perhaps is not being looked at as vital or needed as much as it was before, when it was a bigger story, or when certain stories in the Middle East were bigger. There is a feeling that those stories have waned a little when it comes to international media attention.
Is there a story, or are there a few particular stories that you think are burning to be told out of Syria today that are not getting told?
I think there are multiple stories. It's very difficult for me to even limit to one. I think that, as I said, it's such a protracted conflict on so many different levels. Much more needs to be done in that respect. It's difficult for me to single one out.
And with respect to the state and well-being of women in Syria, in the throes of this ongoing civil war, with ISIS being a power and the state and others, certainly we've seen this in the U.S. debate regarding Afghanistan. You know, you could tell us if it should apply similarly to Syria. There's sort of the politics of the camp that says U.S. hands off Afghanistan, enough U.S. bombing, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's another camp that says you're leaving Afghan women to be forever oppressed by the Taliban if you don't stay in. Is there a similar dynamic in Syria?
I don't want to limit the conversation too much to Syria. I think generally the idea of there being an issue with women's rights in the region is, you know, it's something that we need to talk about and focus on more. I do not believe that Western intervention will solve the problem. I think this needs to be done from the ground up within the various countries we're speaking of. In countries in which there are conflict, it's more difficult to handle these issues, but generally across the Arab world there are movements in these countries, NGOs and women's rights organizations that are working on these issues. And I don't feel at all that Western intervention is the answer, and that we should confuse the two.
Abdul in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Abdul.
How you doing, Brian? Good morning to your guests. I wanted to ask her about a foreign journalist from America. He's a black Muslim from the Bronx. He's the only foreign journalist right now in Syria. His name is Bilal Abdul Karim. Last year, the New York Times made a story about him, where he's from, and he took out a lawsuit against the Trump administration, saying that they wanted to kill him. So I wanted to ask her if she knows about him. He's on Twitter right now. He even made a story last night. His name is Bilal Abdul Karim.
I have heard of him, but I don't know enough about him to discuss him at any detail.
Abdul, thank you for mentioning his work. You were telling me during the break that another important thing to think about when consuming journalism, really, is where the reporter is from. And if an American journalist, let's say, I'm not putting these words in your mouth now, I'm elaborating on what you were saying, but if an American journalist, no matter how well-intentioned, flies into a place without a lot of grounding in that place, the reporting might come out very different than out of the pen or out of the mouth of journalists who are from there. So talk about that, how that's represented by some of the pieces in your book, and how much you see that as an issue, at least with respect to how Americans get information, or what information Americans get about the Arab world.
Sure. I mean, my feeling is that these media outlets employ Americans and therefore send Americans to these places to cover these conflicts. And it's understandable that they do, because essentially they're catering to a Western audience. At the same time, I do think there needs to be more diversity in newsrooms. I do think that more nuanced stories could be told, and that we should start seeing more Arab bylines, because there are people there doing the work, and they have a very nuanced and intricate and detailed understanding of what's happening on the ground. I do think many media outlets are starting to employ more and more Arabs, which is brilliant, and also that there are many, let's say, women of dual nationality who have one foot in the West and one foot in the Arab world, who bring that insight and who also understand Western audiences. So there have been many improvements in this respect. There were two Egyptian women this year who were awarded the Pulitzer Prize in international reporting. But I would say that I do think we need to do more. I do think that the narrative generally on the Arab world needs to be more inclusive. You need to have more women's voices, not just Arab voices. There are a great number of women who are doing great work in the Arab world, I do want to say, of both Western and Arab origin. But I would really like to emphasize that local journalists in particular and fixers who do not have the benefit of a passport or who do not have any foot in the Western world, they are doing such important work on the ground, and very frequently they do not get the recognition they deserve. They are not treated on the same level as their Western counterparts. So in that respect, I don't only think that their voices need to be amplified, I think that they need equal representation and treatment.
There's a fair amount of gallows humor in the book, including how some of the reporters would play a game of, is that the one, where they would sit in the back of a car and wonder aloud which other cars going by would be the car bomb that would blow them to smithereens. Can you describe some of the situations these reporters were in that such dark humor was necessary to persist?
I think necessary is the word there. It's such a dark book and a dark situation and a dark region, and the developments are hardly hopeful. So I think the fact that these women in those situations, not just the women who wrote the essays, but the women who they interacted with on the ground, turned to that sort of humor is brilliant. It's delicious. It makes you realize that, you know, you can still find hope or light or humor in any dire situation. And another essay actually comes to mind, which is by Donna Abu Nasser. She writes about her time in Saudi Arabia. She's currently the Bloomberg bureau chief there. And she writes of situations in which she was, you know, she just found them hilarious, where she was covering a beauty pageant for sheep, for example, or the creative ways in which men would try to hit on women. They would kind of write their phone numbers on post-its and put them on the windows of a car, the car window. So I do think that those moments are necessary generally when you're living in such dire situations or in repressive societies. And also necessary for this book in particular.
Did you say a beauty pageant for sheep?
Yes, I did.
That's a thing?
It is, yeah.
We just have 30, 40 seconds. What about your own work beyond this book? Where can people see you, read you, hear you?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter at Zara Hankier, and I have a website. I do freelance journalism that focuses mostly on the culture of the Middle East, which is of no surprise. I focus on women as well.
So. Where's your most recent story?
I'm actually currently working on the Arab community in New Jersey, a story on the Arab community in New Jersey.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Zara Hankier, she's the editor of the new book, Our Women on the Ground, Essays by Arab Women Reporting from the Arab World, with a foreword by Christiane Amanpour, who we also thank for having joined this segment earlier. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Brian.